This one covers a lot of ground here, literally and figuratively. Best race car driver from any circuit. So we're comparing apples and oranges and bananas and strawberries and mango, guavo, and everything else that you would want here, because we're putting NASCAR, we're putting open wheel, we're putting drag racing, anything else, you know, dirt tracks if you want. We're putting everything in the mix right here for the best race car driver. I'm going to give mine first. I voted for A.J. Foyt on this one because of versatility. I voted for him on the basis of anybody that could win the Daytona 500 and the Indianapolis 500, do well on the IROC circuit as he did. He just had the versatility that impressed me, the ability to win across genres here, if you will. And, Paul, I know that you voted for A.J. Foyt as well. I'm guessing for at least some of the same reasons.
Absolutely. You know, and to me, I just turned 42 not too terribly long ago. For me, A.J. Foyt was the face of auto racing, and for me. Now, obviously, you know, Dale Earnhardt, this guy's been dead, what, 4 years, 3 years? And everywhere I go, I see the number
seven,
three stickers on all these white trash mobiles going up and down, you know, the highway. And if it's not Dale Earnhardt, it's his fraudulent son, Dale Earnhardt Jr., who's the other guy?
You mean Lil E is his son, and then who else are you thinking of? Well, there's Tony Stewart,
the one that used to in the DuPont car, Jeff Gordon.
The homosexual warrior.
And everybody hates this guy.
Gordon, yeah.
And it's good to see that he's not doing well anymore. And if I may sidebar for a moment, speaking of Dale Earnhardt Jr., everybody said, once he jumped ship and he got with the Big Daddy team, Hendrick Motorsports, you're going to see the real Dale Earnhardt Jr. Yes, I agree. He is more fraudulent now than he ever was. The most you talk about overrated athletes. Let's talk about overrated NASCAR drivers. Jr. is overrated. Period. End of story. I don't care who his dad was. And let me say something to you, NETCAR fans, and to the white trash that are watching this show this evening. Dale Earnhardt wasn't anything to write home about either. Thank you. Well, and that is my opening statement at 10:10 p.m.
Well, he did win the second most races of any NASCAR driver. I think he had 76 career wins there. So he.
I give Richard Petty. Okay, Richard Petty is the man before Dale Earnhardt gets even a whiff of recognition as far as I'm concerned.
Interestingly, we may have a tiebreaker coming up at a certain point here with some drivers that have already been mentioned. But, Jason, you talked about you voted for Richard Petty, who Belfi just talked about. Talk about that a little bit. Certainly the most prominent guy in the history of NASCAR in terms of accomplishments by a wide, wide margin.
Paul Belfi with the grade A industry segue. You know what? You guys are putting way too much thought into this compared to me. I can't discredit anything that's been said so far. However, my thought process quite simply was, if I was to sit here and think, racing, I really don't know much about any other circuit but NASCAR. Formula One for a little bit, maybe. Schumacher comes to mind, but when you sit back and just think, who would I imagine is the best? And if you polled a million people, what would they say? And Richard Petty just comes along to me first. Before Earnhardt Sr. had established himself as one of the greats in NASCAR, long before Gordon or Jimmy Johnson or Tony Stewart, it just seemed to me that Richard Petty stood on a pedestal all by himself, overlooking the entire world of NASCAR that he had created.
He was absolutely, as we said, you know, at the top of his field, certainly as far as NASCAR guys go. As far as drivers on the Indy circuit part, that is the focus of Russ's selection.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I really did not put any thought into it. I went with a name. I'm not a racing fan. I don't think I've watched more than two races in my life. I went with the name. I'm honest.
Okay. Well, Mario Andretti being the selection there, let's look at some of the other ones here. As I said, we're going to see some facetious picks here being made. This is clearly the one where I think the least number of dignitaries really cared about this category here. No question about it. Bob Glassman votes for Danica Patrick.
Come on.
Nate Noy, this was a good one, though. Nate Noy voted for Michael Schumacher. That's a good, good, solid one that you could really justify. A dominant, dominant driver on the F1 circuit. Somebody who really, did so much in recent years here. A good selection by Nate.
J-Rock had asked me to vote for Willie T. Ribs.
Wasn't it Willie T. Riggs? Oh, Ribs, okay. My bad. I thought you were making a bit of insensitive humor there.
You know, Rick, I just want to make one comment on the facetious pick.
Yeah.
And that would be that I don't even think Danica Patrick's the best female driver.
Probably not. I mean, I wouldn't take her ahead of Shirley Mulroney or, you know.
But she's certainly the skankiest.
Oh.
Yeah, but how about that smoking chick that's in her dad's a legend.
Ashley Force. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I thought she was supposed to be good.
Who was recently a guest on Resun Racing, heard exclusively on Sports Talk Network, Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. Nice. Ashley Force.
Paul was on his game today.
Ashley Force is prime time. Zanzibar casting a vote for Bill Vukovich Sr. Tony Mazur casts a vote for Tony Stewart. Samantha Jones casts a vote for Ricky Bobby. Steve, the New York Bureau, casts a vote for Dale Earnhardt Sr. Mike Morris votes for Richard Petty. Chris Galloway casts a second vote for Ricky Bobby. And John Adams votes for Jeff Gordon. So as we look at this here...
Why am I not surprised?
Are you amused that our metrosexual friend...
Why am I not surprised? The man that drives the rainbow-colored DuPont car, Jeff Gordon, gets the vote from John Adams. I am not... Oh, you know what? That's just perfect. You know what that did for me? That's like a shot of caffeine.
Your humor on that subject is inappropriate, I must say. As we look at this here, two votes for Foy, two votes for Petty. I'm going to make the editorial decision to cast aside the votes for Ricky Bobby. So we had Jason and Paul and myself who cast votes for these three guys here. Russ, you are the sole tiebreaker here tonight between Richard Petty and A.J. Foy.
I will have to go Richard Petty.
Richard Petty, okay. Richard Petty, the greatest driver in the history of NASCAR by a wide margin. He ends up being... The inducted the best race car driver of any circuit from the FDH Lounge Pantheon here. Three categories to go. Best hockey player, and this is one where, as with basketball, there was one name that kept coming up and coming up and coming up, and this is me pretty much just, hocking a big green loogie square into the wind to have it blow back in my face. But I'm going to cast my vote on an intellectually honest basis here. And, if I wasn't going to go Chalky McChalkerson like so many did with Wayne Gretzky here, if I was going to go another way, one would expect that me being the homer that I am, that I might go for Gordie Howe. I'm not going to, but I am going to stay old school. I'm going to say Bobby Orr, because Bobby Orr, in a really big part of the game, revolutionized the game. I mean, to be a defenseman, I've had some people point out to me that, Red Kelly was a pretty good offensive defenseman in his day, but for Bobby Orr, just leading the rush, just getting it done. I mean, some of the old films that I've watched on him are just unbelievable. It's revolutionary when you look at what he did and the impact that he had, and somebody who was kind of cut short too. I mean, by age 30, I mean we'd seen just about all of his best days because of the knee problems there. But to me, Bobby Orr was the man, and that's where I'm casting my vote.
I will say that, and I hear what you're saying. I respect what you're saying, and I could agree with that. But for me, there are some athletes, there's some people that just transcend what they do. I made this argument years ago, going back to pro wrestling for a moment. When you say pro wrestling, what's the first name that comes out of people's mouths? More times than not, it's Hulk Hogan. Wayne Gretzky is cut from that same cloth. To the casual hockey fan, when he just mentioned professional hockey, NHL, the first name that comes out of people's mouths to the the non-deep fan like you are, Rick, like, and I'm not a deep fan like you are.
Russ is, too.
But
Russ
to the casual fan, the first name that comes out is Wayne Gretzky. That's a name that transcends the sport, and that's why Wayne Gretzky got my vote.
Well, I tell you, Jason, let's go to you because I know you're going to have some thoughts for your Gretzky vote here. And then after that, I want to hear Russ because I know Russ is going to have a lot of elaboration also as a big-time hockey guy. But, Jason, thoughts on taking Gretzky?
Well, there are two people on this panel who not only are bigger fans of the game, but bluntly just know more. So ultimately, you guys can make an argument that may – sway my mind along the way, but I'm an offensive fan in general, regardless of sports. And naturally, when somebody breaks records for scoring, they're going to be on my mind. And second, I would pose a question that will probably prove to insult the machine that is the super hockey fan, and that is going back to the whole younger players are better than older players. Could Gordie Howe or Bobby Orr skate with Gretzky? And I'm being serious. If you take all three of them when they're prime, could they even athletically be on the same ice with Gretzky? Because that's the impression that I get.
Well, you know what? It'd be tough with Gretzky's foot speed, but I'll point out that Bobby Orr's career in the NHL almost, but not quite, almost overlapped that of Wayne Gretzky, and had he not had the knee injuries, it certainly would have overlapped it into the early 80s here. So for my pick in particular, I think it's harder to make that kind of a thing of, you know, one guy skated in the black and white era and the other one skated in Technicolor. I mean, my pick was almost right there with Gretzky time-wise. Russ, your selection, again, and this is one where it sort of surprised me a little bit with your pick because I would have potentially thought you might have gone another way here, but talk about this and if your reasoning kind of overlaps in anything we've heard so far.
Well, I'll say this. Bobby Orr was a better skater than Gretzky, and yeah, he just didn't last long enough, but there's no question you would get a lot of people that would back you up on that, Rick. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled with this one because it's always, for me, between Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier, not because they both ended up playing for the Rangers, just because, and look, Messier ended up winning that two titles without Gretzky, but I still have to look at Gretzky for a couple of reasons. Again, 1.92 points per game. I mean, if you have a guy that you can count on for almost 2 points a game for his whole career, that's his average. It's just, it goes beyond belief. 92 goals, 212 points. I mean, 200 points multiple times, you know, one, two, three, four times. It's just, it's beyond comprehension. There's probably nobody other than maybe Wilt Chamberlain that had an assault on statistics in any sport. And again, you couldn't ignore Wayne Gretzky on the ice. Guys wanted to hit him. He would avoid hits. It's just, he knew where to go. He was there before the defenseman was there. He was there before his players were there. He just, his mind, he's definitely the greatest hockey mind, though some will argue that because they'll say, hey, he's not a great coach, but, you know, whatever, I can't help him on the coaching end. But on the playing end, just tremendous and always knew where to be on the ice and made everybody around him better. And that's the mark of a great player.
Kind of makes you think to a certain, and I never really thought of it this way before tonight, but maybe how much we were cheated, Russ, by the knee injuries with Bobby Orr, because I know he had several years on Gretzky, clearly, and it wouldn't have been exactly the same with him playing against him in his mid-30s. But just think, I mean, if we could have, say, back in 1981 or 82 or whatever, you know, imagine if we could have seen a little bit of overlap. Just, yeah, what a beautiful thing that would have been.
It would have been amazing. I was certainly cheated because, sure, I remember my first glimpse of Bobby Orr was really in the 72 finals against the Rangers. Hated him then, of course, because, you know, they were beating the Rangers. And he was still pretty great then, but even then was starting to wind down a bit. And I actually have more memories and probably watched him more times when he played for the Blackhawks, sadly, just because I was a little older.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, Bobby Orr just was one of those Joe Namath kind of things where he was better than Namath, too. But the injuries were just so debilitating. that it would have been nice to have that crossover. I agree.
It would have been tremendous. A lot of votes here for Gretzky. We got a couple emails that I want to get to on some of our categories, but I'm going to finish the hockey things here first. Gretzky, this might have been our biggest landslide of the night. Bob Glassman says Wayne Gretzky. Nate Noy casts a vote for Patrick Waugh. Part of his reasoning was that at least one goalie should be represented in here. Zanzibar.
I thought it was going to be just to piss you off.
Well, it did that, too. It did. I told him he just killed a part of my soul by casting that vote there. Zanzibar votes for Wayne Gretzky on the email here. The other dignitaries who cast votes, Tony Mazur voting for, this was unusual. I don't think, in my estimation, he wasn't the best skater in his family, but Tony Mazur cast a vote for Brett Hall. Samantha Jones goes for Mario Lemieux. Steve, the New York Bureau, goes for Mark Messier. Mike Morris votes for Andy Death Machine Bush. I don't even get the reference. I'll have to ask him about that. Chris Galloway votes for Gordie Howe. Imagine that. Galloway votes for Howe and not me. And John Adams votes for Mario Lemieux. So Wayne Gretzky in a landslide here. Wayne Gretzky inducted as I hoist the Dundee here. Wayne Gretzky goes into the Pantheon as the best hockey player of all time here. The emails that we have, Don from Amsterdam, New York says, Dale Earnhardt Sr., in my mind, is the best racer. Yes, Richard Petty won the same number of cup titles, 7, plus 124 more wins. But to me, Earnhardt's style that earned the Intimidator nickname was unparalleled. He made passes during races that just no one else would try or succeed at. The evolution of Earnhardt's competition, I believe, helps him become the greatest. The Petties, Allisons, Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, Jeff Gordon, through all those names, Dale Earnhardt won 76 races, 7 titles, and the most celebrated victory of all time, the 1998 Daytona 500. So that's an interesting vote. We did have him represented on one of the ballots here. Dennis Hoffman sending us an email and says, hey, Paul, why are you all hating on NASCAR? NASCAR is the single greatest sport in the world. What would us rednecks do without see our drivers on TV every week? Dale E. is the best. Sincerely, all the no teeth, tobacco chewing rednecks in America, and Mike Petak. Oh, there's a vicious one. Dennis with a second email and says, Jeff Gordon has got the best-looking car in the world. Sincerely, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Glad. And another email here. Stan Humphreys sends an email. It says, how come you have nothing but hockey talk all the time and no Browns talk? apparently Stan wasn't listening when we talked about Jim Brown the previous segment there. So, way to maintain an attention span there, Stan. The last two that we have here for tonight are in baseball. Best baseball pitcher and best baseball hitter. This was a sport where I felt the need to draw it into two separate categories here because, to me, it's so much more apples and oranges when you're comparing players on that side of the divide than, say, offensive or defensive players in football or goalies versus defensemen versus forwards in hockey. Some might disagree. Some might say that those are excessively apples and oranges, but I thought that hitters and pitchers were one where it really called for it to be divided into two. I want to point this out also, and I will again when we start on the hitters here. By hitters, I meant position players, non-fielders, or not non-pitchers. So you are free to take into account defense. That's encouraged, actually. I did with my pick. So I didn't mean just hitter, but, the hitters, but also taking into account their defense as well. But we're starting with pitchers, and this is one where, again, by Russ's previous criteria of having to actually see a pitcher in your lifetime or see, any of these guys in your lifetime, this is something that might irk him a tad. But I don't see how I can avoid taking, for the greatest pitcher of all time, the one, the only, the legendary Walter Johnson, a very, very, very dominant arm, somebody who just mowed people down, strikeouts left and right, and somebody who was just the dominant pitcher of his age at a time when there were some really other great arms as well around then. But to me, Walter Johnson is the guy. Russ, yours was much more contemporary. Talk about yours and pick apart my Walter Johnson pick.
I'm not going to pick apart your Walter Johnson pick per se because, you know, he was tremendous. I can't even tell you, though, that I've actually seen a highlight of him.
Me neither.
So I think it is all stat-based. But I will tell you this. Babe Ruth beat him twice head-to-head as a pitcher.
Interestingly enough, Zanzibar voted for him as a pitcher as well as a hitter. So there is a Babe Ruth pitcher vote.
But I just tell you that. He actually used to match up against Walter Johnson. I went with Tom Seaver. Yes, I'm from New York. I will fully admit that. But I also will tell you that if you match him up statistically against pitchers, again, I just matched him up against Clemens the other day with someone that thought Clemens, even with his juiced-up numbers, would win, and he doesn't win because, again, there's a lot of factors to take into account. You know, he had 300 wins. He had 3,600 strikeouts. He had an ERA under 3. Even if you go look at something, you know, like WHIP, which wasn't even popular back in the day, his career WHIP was a 1.12. Every fantasy player would kill for that if they can get a player like that every year. And he had some years that he was under 1 as a starter. So, again, highest vote ever for the Hall of Fame. Tells you a little something. Some people will always go for some other picks, but again, won 20 games a million times. He still has one record, which seems like probably the simplest of records to be broken, yet it's going to end up being one of the hardest, and that he has a record for 10 strikeouts, 10 consecutive strikeouts in a game. And I got to tell you, that is a hard record to break.
That is going to be tough to beat, and I tell you what, on a night here where I'm looking at this, we have 13 different ballots being cast. To me, it's appropriate that Tom Seaver gets named on at least one of them, and spoiler alert, that was the only one. But this is one of these ones where I look at it and say, you know what, the name deserved to come up, so I'm glad that you did that. Another name... This was, if anything, even more unlikely than yours, Russ, and possibly even more unlikely than mine. Jason, reaching back going, this is his most old-school pick of the night. Satchel Paige, Jason.
Yeah, and I want to apologize because I can be very honest and say that I've never seen him pitch a single throw in my life. However... with this particular one, I'll tell you, some names that came to mind initially were Sandy Koufax, Roger Clemens, Nolan Ryan, you know, pitchers that I either saw or had been told by the men in my family how great they were. And the reason I was Satchel Paige is because it's been my experience that anything I've ever heard of him has been almost Greek god-esque, if you will. You know, he's Paul Bunyan, as far as I'm concerned, from what I've heard. Now, if we made the prerequisite that it had to be somebody that you had seen, well, naturally, he wouldn't have been my pick. But from what I had heard, it just seemed like he was a god. And had he, and this comes up very often, had he been given the opportunity to have an extended career against every other Hall of Fame player of that time frame, i.e. white guys, that he would have mowed them down left and right. So when you hear somebody who actually saw him pitch say that, you know, Babe Ruth couldn't hit him if Satchel was hung over, kind of sticks with you. So I have no real concrete evidence. I got no numbers to throw at you, but it just seems that of all the pitchers I've ever heard stories being told about, his seems the most mythological as far as his impact.
Well, the one thing I could add to that is I've interviewed a lot of Negro League players over the years and have looked at a lot of the numbers and such and read some clippings and this and that. He clearly was the class of that league, which would have made him one of the two, three, or four best pitchers in the world anyhow because they had tremendous talent in that league. He did get Babe Ruth out in that barnstorming tour. I have no problem with Satchel Paige. I think that's a good pick.
The thing I've always said, Russ, and you're somebody that's a little bit of a historian, I'd like to run my theory past you as far as when people talk about the color line and everything like that in baseball. My notion is that when you're looking at it from a competitive purpose, people only want to talk about the color line as far as being a moral issue, and I don't think anybody outside of a few Klansmen would dispute the color line was a horrible thing in MLB. But from a competitive perspective, Babe Ruth never had to hit against these guys. Yeah, Babe Ruth was also he was in a league where you didn't have a lot of the, you know, journeyman crap, you know, long relievers that you have in baseball today. My sense is that it all kind of evens out here, because to me, you had the American League and the National League. They were compact. They were not nearly as big as they were these days. And you also had the Negro Leagues, which, again, it was kind of uneven because of the barnstorming. It wasn't always, you know, sometimes it would be different numbers of teams in there. But to me, that was essentially like a third major league, if you will. It just didn't play the other two teams. But in terms of caliber of players, it sort of was a third major league, albeit one that was separate. So I look at it as being a thing where if you're looking at today's competition versus back then, I think it all evens out, because you didn't face some of the best players, but you also didn't face some of the worst players.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example, and I totally agree with that theory. Hal Newhouser got voted into the Hall of Fame same time as Tom Seaver. You look at his numbers and you say 1944, 1945, 1946, four years, right? 29 wins, 25 wins, 26 wins. The minute everybody's back from the war, 17 wins. Then he had a 21-win season. Then he had 18, 15, and forget it. That's it. I've just named all his double-digit win seasons. He's in the Hall of Fame, but he basically made his career when guys were at war. And I make the analogy that when the two leagues, or the whole world, when it was segregated and you had the Negro Leagues and you had Major League Baseball, that was the same to me as when players went to war. They didn't have the full competition there.
I would tend to agree with that. Paul Belfi's selection was Greg Maddux, which was a pick that was also made by Nathan Noy. So some convergence between Paul and Nate on that pick there. The pick for best pitcher, Bob Glassman. This is interesting. Didn't think we'd see any closers in here, but Bob Glassman says Mariano Rivera. Zanzibar votes for Babe Ruth as best pitcher, as well as best hitter. Tony Mazur votes for Randy Johnson, voting for a separate one from me. As I said, some of these votes were going to be a bit facetious. Mike Morris casts a vote for John Rocker. John Adams casts a second vote for Mariano Rivera. But the winner, as I'm looking at this here, I don't think anybody else had three votes. Chris Galloway, Steve, the New York Bureau, and Samantha Jones, all voting for Nolan Ryan, an unlikely winner here.
Okay. That actually surprises me a little bit.
I can't really get behind this one, though, because, again,
I'll say something after you, Rick, because I've
just
seen
say,
a lot of them.
He strikes me more as a product of longevity, Russ, as opposed to being, you know, super dominant in any one moment or whatever. I mean, you know, you definitely remember more of his career than I do. I tend to remember more the late 70s into the 80s and then early 90s stuff here. So you could correct me if I'm wrong, but he doesn't strike me as being a guy that was dominant enough for a period of time. That I would certainly put Maddux above him, and I don't even have Maddux necessarily super high on my own list, but Maddux in the mid-90s, I'd put that stretch up, particularly at the beginning of the steroid era when it really began to take root. I'd take what he did in that stretch of 4 or 5 years against what anybody did ever. I don't think I could say that for Nolan Ryan for any part of his career.
No, it was a longevity factor. For the marks that voted for Nolan Ryan, just understand his championship series ERA, 3.70. His postseason, his whole postseason ERA is 3.07. That's okay. He's had two postseason wins. Okay. I mean, he was never an amazing pitcher. He was always a great thrower. He always had no hitters. He always struck out the world. But for much of his career, he was a 500 pitcher, and that used to be what he was known as, was a 500 pitcher. And then he did have a resurgence, and that time in Texas definitely helped him. But again, his career winning percentage is .526. That is not the greatest pitcher of all time. It's just you can't do it.
Before we walk away from this one, and I'm assuming that Russ has the numbers. Long before we ever decided to do this Pantheon show, his name came up in the discussion. I went back and looked at it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you look at just career averages, it's not very impressive, is it? You take away the no-hitters and the strikeout, the gaudy strikeout numbers. He just seems statistically to look like just, you know, just another guy. And maybe I was growing up, I built him up to be better than he was. But to me, after looking at the numbers, I just walked away not feeling all that impressed.
Well, you're right, Jason, because if you went by his 162-game average, he would be 13-12 with a 3.19 ERA.
Yeah.
Hard to call that the greatest pitcher of all time, and he had won 20 games twice in his career. That's it.
And also a career whip of 125. I mean, that's not elite by any stretch of the imagination. You know, that's
no, and he had years where he was a 1.58 whip. So, you know.
Yes. I'm looking at 1970, actually. that was, or 71. I've got it in front of me here now. And he had a 143 a couple of years later. I think it was in 74. So, yeah, I can't get behind that one at all. To me, that's almost tantamount to our Bon Jovi pick here tonight that I don't personally endorse. But whatever, Nolan Ryan enters the pantheon as the greatest pitcher of all time here tonight. Paul Belfi signaling that he's less than enthused by that pick. We go to our final selection of the evening here, gentlemen, the best hitter in baseball. And as I said before, by hitter, I mean position player. It's not limited to the hitting side here. And the funny thing is, as I was explaining this to Nate Noy before he cast his vote, he gave it to me over the phone last night as opposed to by email. As I was laying it out and I explained to him that I had taken into account defense as well as hitting, he knew exactly from when I started talking about it what my pick was going to be. And he called it correctly. He knows me well. My pick is Willie Mays, because I think when you take into account the ground that the man was able to cover in center field, at least up until the 73 World Series, but when you look into account what he was able to do out there and then swinging the stick, what you'd call in hockey a two-way player, to me, Willie Mays, the greatest of all time. And, Jason, I note that that was one where you had agreed with me.
Yeah, again, a player that I've not seen much of except for in highlights. You know, the over-the-shoulder catch, maybe one of the more famous plays I've ever seen. But knowing that we do fantasy stuff a lot, I sort of approach the hitting thing as, you know, Babe Ruth is out to me because Wake may strike out and across the board, you know, as far as filling the whole stat line, wasn't really impressive in the intermediate categories. Hank Aaron, as you mentioned earlier about Nolan Ryan, Rick, I hate to be that guy and kind of crap on Nolan Ryan or on Hank Aaron, but he seems to me that he was just a guy that hit, you know, 25 to 35 home runs every year for about 300 years. So that didn't really jump off. When you look at Willie Mays, he's on the all-time home run list. I think he's, what, fourth maybe?
Yeah.
He had an over 300, I want to say 305 batting average, registered a decent amount in doubles and even triples when you look at everyone in that top area. And, of course, you mentioned the defense was insane. If I could give you one baseball player that I wish I had the opportunity to see in real time, it would be him in a landslide.
That's something where I think if we'd had the opportunity to really see him up close and extensively, I think we'd only be more impressed with him. Paul Belfi cast a vote for somebody else who was seconded. Paul and Steve, the New York Bureau, both casting a vote for Pete Rose. So two votes apiece there, but a very popular pick, an extremely popular pick, was the one cast by you, Russ, the pick of Babe Ruth.
Well, here's the thing. I want to tell Jason, I did get to see a decent amount of Willie Mays. My dad did talk about him all the time. That was his favorite player. I would say if this said best all-around player, it'd be Willie Mays, and he'd have gotten my vote, too. I had to pick Babe Ruth because I've done a lot of studying on Babe Ruth, and I've seen a certain amount of stats, and I've read a lot of books. And the one thing about Babe Ruth is, again, if you want to look at hitter, he had a 342 lifetime average. And most people associated Ted Williams with maybe being the greatest hitter ever. And Ted Williams' lifetime average was 344. Then if you take into consideration all the other hitting feats that Babe Ruth did, and by the way, I know you mentioned strikeouts, he's never struck out 100 times in his life.
Right.
His highest strikeout total is 93. You look at any slugger nowadays who could hit 40-something homers and strike out less than 100 times, and he's a freak of nature. Also, 130 36 triple. Everybody thinks, oh, Babe Ruth was fat and this and that. By the time we saw Babe Ruth, because that was when pictures were starting to be prevalent and all of a sudden moving pictures, well, that he was heavier then. But if you look at some of the Conlon collection and everything else, you'll see a lighter, trimmer Babe Ruth. And again, tremendous doubles hitter, hits guy. I mean, you know, 200 hits. And you know, again, if we do the homers thing, you know, he had more homers than half the league one year. But again, he had a year where he hit 378. And people don't give him credit for average. And even at the age of 36, which I thought was one of his best statistical years, if not his best, 46 homers, 163 RBIs, 373 average.
And Russ, there was an article I read a couple of years ago. I think it might have been in Parade magazine. It was a real shocker to read because it really challenged your assumptions about Babe Ruth, talking about one of the years back in the 1920s when he just pretty much decided that he was, you know, tired of being fat and out of shape and everything like that, and went on this extensive off-season training regiment, and just something that we would associate with modern players. I mean, it just, you almost had to duct tape your head to keep it from exploding at the thought of Babe Ruth as being like the forerunner of the Adonis modern player. Now, as you said, over time, he probably relapsed into that guy, and that's maybe who we tend to think of these days, but that was remarkable. The one thing I want to give you a little bit of counterpoint, though, Nate Noy, our associate here, when I got his vote last night, I told him your reasoning on Babe Ruth over Ted Williams. He voted for Ted Williams. He said, yeah, well, tell Russ, Ted Williams, he said, remind Russ, because he was sure that you know this, Ted Williams sacrificed many of his prime years to WW2.
No, and that's true, and I do give him much respect for that, and he's right. The thing also, you know, again, about Babe Ruth is you have to look at it and say, okay, he did go to a fat farm. There are pictures of him doing that, and I'm pretty sure he probably did partake in the use of greenies, as many baseball players did. I think that's the worst that he ever did. But all of his drinking and everything else and late-night cavorting certainly hurt his career more than that helped him take a few pounds off.
Right. I think that's entirely possible. These other votes here, Bob Glassman votes for Manny Ramirez. I knew he respected him a lot, but not to that degree. As I said, Nate voted for Ted Williams. Zanzibar votes for Babe Ruth. John Adams and Tony Mazur both casting votes for Tony Gwynn. Interesting that we see votes for Gwynn. Nobody voted for Ty Cobb. This was interesting. Samantha Jones votes for Hank Aaron, the pick that was dissed previously by Jason Jones. Interesting there. As I said, Steve and Paul both voting for Pete Rose. Mike Morris and Chris Galloway both voting for Babe Ruth. It's a landslide here as you look at this, or maybe not a complete landslide, but that's four votes here out of 13. But Babe Ruth ends up being the winner for best hitter in the Pantheon here for the FDH Lounge. So, Russ, your argument very persuasive here tonight.
Well, you know, the one thing I'll say about Ruth, and I've had a lot of conversations with his great-grandson and everything else, I will argue the point to the fact that I think he's one of the greatest athletes ever in the world. And everybody's going to say, oh, again, with the fat guy stuff, but if you really think about it with the pitching and the hitting and the dominance, everything else, you can make the argument.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I mean, you know, almost like a Jim Thorpe kind of a thing. In the same sport, but really sort of a cross-type thing. In the same sport, you know, excelling at both ends of, you know, very, very diverse, very different skill sets in it within the same sport. An email again from Dennis Hoffman. He says, the best hitter is the one I just got done finishing. Sincerely, Rob Van Dam. So nice humor there from him.